Accession number 14932, Norman Edwards, Reel 8.
Mr. Edwards, Reel 8, we were talking about your time in the line in the Somme area in July 1916.
Yes.
And eventually you actually had to make an attack,
yes.
Not on John Copps, but
yes,
near John Copps.
The whole battalion were going to attack the line in front of John Copps. A company were given certain distance, and I remember the instructions we got in from the Captain Elliot in the dugout. B Company were from point P to point Q, which was on a map, a sort of wiggly line. But we really didn't know very much about this, where it was. But at dawn that morning...
Now, you were to go in the third wave, and you were to be on the right flank. Is that correct?
That's it. We went to... I had one little incident I remember, that little gunboat Smith, who wrote... He was a newly promoted officer from the ranks. He used the famous word, the most important order ever used in that war. That was, "Follow me, chaps." We went off over the top. We hadn't gone more than 20 yards before German machine guns opened fire. We had to go down, flatten down. And then we tried to crawl forward, but this cross machine gun fire all across this area was absolutely devastating.
How did you feel?
Well, you just felt completely crippled. If you started to move, a thing would go vzz, vzz, vzz. It would hit sparks on the barbed wire, and that sort of thing would appear. And it was quite useless attempting to go forward that way. Particularly as we with the Maxim gun, we're always supposed to be
Lewis
with the
guns.
Third wave.
The Lewis guns.
I mean the Lewis guns. Yes, with the Lewis guns, we were supposed to be with the third wave. Well, of course, the first two waves had got so far, and then they were just we were all crawling about there in the deepest shell craters we could find to save ourselves from this crossfire.
Now, before you go on, just going back a bit, how did you feel in the trench while you were waiting to go over the top? What was going through your mind? Can you remember? Or how did you feel?
I think one felt, well, I know I offered a prayer to God that I might be preserved, to do my duty, but other than that, this was it. This is what we'd been all trained for. There was no question of not going. We just had to do it.
Were you scared?
Well, I wouldn't say scared so much as frustrated, put it that way. I know that when we went over the top and we'd gone perhaps 30 yards and when we had to get down into the shell crater because of this thing, I know it, a feeling of intense rage went through me. On one occasion I thought, I wondered whether the right thing to do would be to fix your bayonet and just go in and try and clear them out of it. But as soon as you started to move there, this awful crossfire from machine guns went on. It was impossible to do it. You could. I remember that quite within recent years, at Gloucester headquarters, their notes of the battle was, they were attacking this particular area, and it said, A Company were successful in capturing a part of the trench, B Company were unsuccessful as they ran into heavy machine gun fire, C and D made progress.
And you that,
it's all just a few words, and I thought to myself, well, those just few words, B Company were unsuccessful as they ran into machine gun fire. We certainly did.
Now, before we go on, there's just one more point. You say that, is it gunboat Smith? I can't. your officer said the most important order in the British Army was follow me, chaps. Is that what he really said?
Well, that's but he certainly said that. That was that when we'd been through the dugout, we'd had our orders that we were to attack at a certain hour, and we went back to that part of the line where we'd been told to go there, and this little chap, John Boat Smith, came along and he said, follow me, chaps, and he sort of crawled over our own parapet out into the wire, and we followed him.
Was it important to have an officer to lead you like that? And was it an inspiration? I mean, what was their role?
Well, I think so. I've often felt that order of follow me, chaps, was the most important one of the lot.
Now, when you got into no man's land, did you manage? Were the gaps already in the British wire?
Well, I don't know. We must have got. It could have been pretty badly smashed to pieces with all this crossfire. You see, there was no obstruction as far as I remember. No real difficulty.
Now you took cover in a shell hole.
When the gun started, we went to earth and then crawled forward, and then you come to a shell crater. You get down in there for the time being, because you could feel that the bullets were going over the top of it.
Had you had many casualties up to then?
Well, I didn't know, but we must have, I think. Because you see, my left gun was in charge of a fellow named MacDonald, and I know halfway through this delay part, I said to the fellow named Kitty Rice and the others, I'm going off to see if I can find MacDonald, find out how he is. And I started to crawl, not forward to the German, but along there. But I failed to find him. And the only time I did see him was that after I'd been wounded.
Ah, right, we'll come back to
that. Come
now,
to that later.
What about Smith? Did you see anything else of Smith or any of your other officers?
I'm not quite sure, but I think he was killed in that outfit.
But you don't remember seeing him now, wounded?
I never saw anything of him afterwards.
But did you see him wounded at all? In your diary you mentioned he was wounded and then killed later, but you don't recall that now?
Yes, he was wounded, that's right. Because I had a job I know some officer. We'd got him back to a big shell hole where we were dressing his wounds, and some officer, I don't know who he was, whether he was our regiment or not, but he said, try and get him back to your front line, because he was in the back. Well, that was a most awful sort of trip, because I remember.
Is this before or after you were wounded?
This is before I was wounded.
Right.
While I was getting him back to this, by the way, before I'd gone over the top, I'd take a sight on the moon, which was up there. It was up half left, so that when this other officer said, "Try and get him back to your lines," I had a look at the thing and I thought, "No, I've got to go back there," because it was everything banging where you might have gone. Wandering in and anywhere.
I should have asked, and about what time was the attack?
Hmm?
The attack was during the night. About what time was it?
Time? Oh, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning.
So, yes. Let me get this straight. You'd gone to look for MacDonald, and you'd gone to look for MacDonald and the left Lewis gun, and you hadn't been able to find him.
No.
But you found Smith.
I found the gunboat Smith. He was wounded. I got him back to a deep dugout where there was another officer of I don't know which regiment. And after we dressed his wound...
He was wounded in the arm.
Yes.
How bad was he at the time? How badly wounded was Smith at the time?
Well, he was able to crawl, because when we... I knew where our front line was, and I was able to get him... back. I was started to get him back so far, and then I got hit. The bullet that was intended for there went through the this part of the arms.
Just above your left elbow.
Left elbow. It was later described as GS wound left arm.
Did it hurt immediately? How did it? I mean, was it a...
Yes, it was just as if somebody hit me with a crowbar. A bang. And this all this side was useless. Anyway, I managed to get to the end of a patrol where there were two of our men in Sordid and told them about Gunboat Smith being in this shell crater a little way downtown. Get him out.
So you'd had to leave Smith when you got... You'd had to leave Smith when you got wounded.
Yes, yes. And
was there still a lot of machine gun fire or shell fire on No Man's Land while you were doing all this?
Both were going on. Most of it was machine gun fire. You could see bullets sparking on our own wire. And anyway, I somehow or the other crawled up to our front line. I was helped pulled in by two of our own men, and I wandered back and came to a junction of trenches where there was an officer who said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I've been wounded." "Oh," he said, "have you? Well, carry on down here to Crucifix Corner," and so forth. And that was the last I saw of that particular action.
What? Now, do you know what happened to your unit that day? The attack was unsuccessful.
Well,
obviously.
All I know is that I've since heard from the headquarters there about that action, that B Company was a failure because of this heavy crossfire. A and B captured the enemy's front line in places. It was a sort of partial victory, but nothing important, and the casualties were pretty heavy.
Now you got back to the brigade machine gun post, your old section.
Yes, on the way back, I found that an old pal of mine, a friend of mine named Dennis Baker, he said, "Hello, Eddie, what are you doing here?" And I told him I'd been wounded. He said, "Oh, come and sit down." And I sat on a trench, and I think I passed out for a bit. Anyway, they took me inside their dugout, and I remember there was an officer in charge of it, and there was also a bottle of whiskey on the table, but they didn't offer me any. And then from there onwards I had to find my own way down to a place called Crucifix Corner where there was a dressing station, and from there onwards it was a question of patching up. Then you were put into a coach and taken a bit further down when another officer looked at you and he decided whether you were really wounded or not, because if you really sort of had a scratched, they wouldn't let you go back. But I remember on the third occasion when somebody saw me, they did give me a blighty ticket. It's in that diary.
It's in the photograph album.
GS wound left arm, ENG at Med England, sitting. That meant you didn't have to have a stretcher. That thing was worth thousands of quid to me at the time.
Was a blighty wound something? It was a blighty wound you'd got.
That's what we used to call it, a blighty ticket. In other words, it was a pass to go to England and get out of this awful hell of a battle.
Now, just one point I want to ask you about the attack. When you went back to help help Smith back to the front line, you were in a sense leaving your machine gun team.
Yes.
Were you aware of a conflict of duty there?
Well, I did. I did. I know that at the beginning, I felt my job is that I must go and find Ken MacDonald. He's got the other machine gun, and we've got to go forward together. But then, as I say, I ran into this poor chap, Gunboat Smith, dragged him into this deep crater, and there a senior officer instructed me to get him back to the front line. And I said, "Well, I've got charged two machine guns." And he said, "Your job is to get this man back." He said, "You can't do anything with this crossfire going on," which, of course, he was quite right. I wasn't sort of funking my duty or anything of that sort.
No, I wasn't in Black Dog. But do you know what happened to your Lewis Gunn teams?
They were both, yes. McDonald was shot through the shoulders. When we got down to this crucifix corner, he and one or two others eventually found their way down there. And he'd been shot, the bullet of wood gone across his shoulders. Mine was in the arms and so forth, and there were various other men who were on stretchers and so forth. And the Red Cross people were moving us gradually by coach.
But what happened to your team, do you know?
To do the truth, I don't know exactly what did happen.
Now,
I know that Gunboat Smith was one. He was killed by that in that action. He died of wounds. One of the men, I think his name was Kitty Rice, was wounded. But the majority of the chaps, I regret to say, I don't know what happened to them.
Were you given an anti-tetanus injection?
Yes. Oh yes, and I think I must have had 3 detailed inspections by senior Red Cross officers. I suppose they had to do this because they didn't want people to be sent back if they'd only been lightly scratched. But as I say, the final one was by quite a senior man. I think he was a major general or something of that sort, Red Cross man. And he was the fellow who wrote out this blighty ticket. GS wound, left arm. ENG, sitting. That was sufficient to, with his name scribbled on the thing, with this ticket. Didn't matter who on the route said, what are you doing here? And why aren't you up in the front line? And you show them this thing, and that was that.
Now, do you remember the trip back to England? The trip back to England.
Yes.
Do you remember what happened next then? You got the blighty ticket. And then
well, we a coach to a hospital place, one night in a bed, another coach, then on the train, then to some port, I forget whether it was Le Havre, anyway it was a port, then on the steamer. One thing that happened on the steamer was I was on the deck, the thing there, and that one of these sort of lights was lifted up, and a rough looking chap said, you all right, mate? I said, well, I've been wounded. He said, like a cup of tea? I said, yes, very much, thank you. And he made this tea and held it up through, and he said, that'll be 5 francs or something. I thought, well, what a thing to do with a wounded man insisting on being payment. I thought, he's not a very good stoker or something. Then, having arrived in Southampton, it was a coach to the train, a train to the somewhere, I didn't know where, a long journey, and then another coach, and finally an ambulance, and finally put to bed.
Now that was
it. I didn't know where it was. And the next morning I said, where am I? Dudley Road Hospital, Birmingham. That was the first time I came into the Birmingham area.
And you were in Ward C7.
I spent most of my life here since.
Had you had any proper treatment of your wound up to this point?
Yes, I think so. I know the nurses were very skillful and very pleasant. The doctor, I didn't think much of very much. He prodded this thing and poked it, but rather hurt quite a bit. And then he said, send him down to the operating room. And when he got to the door, he turned round and he said, here, if you can stick it, I don't think you need come down to the operating room. And he came back and did a bit more poking, and they got bits of metal or something out of this wound. Then, I think I don't want to bore you with the story again about the sister at the end of the week giving me her book.
Carry on, tell me.
Do you want that?
Yes, I do,
well,
yes.
Well, this sister, I forget her name, Sister Carter, I think it was, at the end of the week she said, "Corporal, I'd like you to write something in my autograph book, would you?" I said, "Well, I'd try." And she gave me her autograph book, and at the end of the week I handed it back to her, and she read, "You can talk about the Spanish Inquisition, you can rave about the martyrs on the rack, when they pulled their arms and legs out of position and took their eyeballs out and put them back. For his wickedness, the Hun is rightly hated, and for dirty deeds we blame the wily Turk. But they're nothing to the tortures perpetrated in Ward C7 when Sister gets to work." Well, she looked me straight in the eye, and I thought she was going to slap my face, which I deserved. And then she said, "Corporal, if I promise to put some extra strong iodine in your wound, do you think it would inspire you to write a second verse?" So I said, "Well, I don't know, I'll try." And she gave me the book, and at the end of the next week, I gave it back to her, and this time she read, "First she prods me with a prober long and pointed, then she squeezes me until I howl and squeal. I feel as though my limbs were all disjointed, and I tingle from my head unto my heel. The hair upon my head is growing skywards. A clammy sweat breaks out upon my brow when she whispers to me sweetly, 'Corporal Edwards, we're going to put the iodine in now.'" But they were very, very fine, skillful, and very nice nurses there. We got on well with them.
So the treatment was painful, but you didn't mind, Rick. The treatment was painful, but it could be avoided.
It was a bit painful until they finally located the bit of metal that had been left in. And then after a time, I was transferred to another unit for the sort of get well unit. And I remember on a route march there, I was the leading NCO of a platoon, and there was an NCO at the back of the platoon in front of me, and he started to quote this very thing that he'd seen, and I said, "Where'd you get that from?" He said, "Oh, it was written on the wall in divisional headquarters." So I said to him, "Would you like to hear the second verse?"
Now, the next thing you went to was the VAD hospital at Starbridge.
Starbridge, yes.
Do you remember that? That was a sort
of...
Yes,
I'd forgotten. I was glad you mentioned that.
That was a sort of convalescent hospital.
And while we were there, we were taken around to various places. I know there's one place where they made glass, and one of the men made a very nice little tumbler, and he said, "What's your moniker, mate?" So I thought, didn't know what he meant. I said, "Moniker." He said, "Hey, well, what's your name?" I said, "Edwards." He said, no, "your first name." So I told him Norman, and he got this glass, and he went and wheeled, and it went, and they handed it to me, and then in perfect thing, the word Norman was written on this glass. And years afterwards, I went to Starbridge, and I mentioned this with some at the glassworks there, and they said, "Oh, if you got that glass now, we'd give you anything for it." I said, "Oh, no, sadly it got broken." "Oh, what a pity," she said. "We'd have loved to have had that thing, our souvenir." That was by the way.
Now, you were in Starbridge in late August, September.
Yes.
What was your next move? Just before we go on, did you have any visitors from your family or friends while you were there?
Any
visitors?
Yes. I think they must have come. I know very shortly afterwards I was given leave and I was able to go home for a short spell. Then it was from there that I decided to apply for a commission in the... Well, at that time, I think they were wanting men for tank corps.
Now, Had you ever thought of getting a commission before? Because you were obviously the sort of chap that was suitable, and several of your friends in the Maxim gun section, including Owen.
I don't think I had, really. It was only after I was wounded I thought, well, I could be of use that way. So I applied for and was granted a commission. Then I went to some special college, I forget where it was now.
Now, I think you were at Cheltenham for quite a while, weren't you, before?
Yes.
Do you remember much about your time at Cheltenham?
Yes, we used to do marches and so forth, and just ordinary routine training.
And how was your arm?
Well, it was slowly improving.
Did you have to...
It was the left arm, wasn't the right one.
Did you have to go in front of a medical board?
Occasionally, the medical officer had a look at it and said, oh, it seems to be doing quite well.
Now, after Cheltenham, in December, you were posted to the Officers' Training Battalion of the Machine Gun Corps at Purbright.
Yes.
To start on the 1st of January, 1917.
Oh, yes.
That's where you went, Purbright, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Now, what do you remember of your training at Purbright as an officer?
Not a great deal, except that whenever we got onto the question of machine guns, I found I could tell the instructor things that he didn't know because of the practical experience I'd had. As a result of all this, he must have mentioned this to the leading officer that mattered there, because I was pulled out of this crowd of chaps that were under ordinary training and given special training as an instructor. And after I'd apparently satisfied them, I was shot off to France, and there we created...
Do you remember anything about this special training?
I can't think I do. It was just... As I say in that rhyme, we swatted hard at military law.
Could you tell me that on the tape? Could you recite the rhyme for me again?
Drills. We came down here and started work a month ago. They taught us all the special things we ought to know. To form fours by numbers, to form platoon, to march on compass bearings by the light of the moon. We swatted hard at military law. Our drill upon parade was without flaw. But when we go away, as we may do someday, we'll never see a tank at all. The reason for that slightly pessimistic view was that at that time, only about three or four men from that particular training squad went to the tank corps. The rest were apparently sent to other infantry units, as far as I know.
So although it was...
I was one of four, I think, that were actually posted to the tank corps.
Now, had they trained you in how to be an officer, had they trained you in how to be an officer, the art of command, things like that, how to control men, how to behave in the mess?
Oh, yes, they gave you all the usual sort of... To set an example by proper training and so forth. I can't remember the full details now, but it was everything you did had to be done with the best possible manner, to set an example to the men. Like when you're even forming fours, you could do that in a sloppy way, or you could do it in a brisk guards type of that manner.
Now, you passed out from Purbright in April. What was your next move? Was that when you went to Bovington? Oh, we've looked it up. You went to Bovington, and one of the things happened there was that you had a lecture from Captain Bell about the lessons learnt about tanks in the Arras battle. Do you remember any of that?
I'm afraid I don't.
Do you remember much about what you thought the purpose of tanks was at the time? I mean, did you understand the tactics of tank warfare?
No, it escapes me. I don't know whether there's anything in my notes about it, but I don't remember it personally.
Now, the next thing, you went to Lulworth for an intensive instructor's course on gunnery.
Yes.
Now, was that just in machine guns, or was it in the machine
gun and the 6-pounder guns?
Now, which machine gun were you using?
Which one?
Which machine gun was it?
Probably the Maxim.
Not the Vickers?
It might have been the Vickers, yes. The Vickers was only a refined sort of Maxim gun, you know.
And what about the 6-pounder? What did you think of the 6-pounder?
Well, that was a new one. That was a new artillery thing. That was quite a simple device. You simply push the shell in, close the breech, and then turn the wheel to get the elevation and so forth. You could range that way. And as I say, when I got